No, nee, I did not introduce you.
That's okay.
Thanks for the glasses.
Thank you.
Sun was in our eyes, yeah.
I think I always feel bad for when an artist has to talk about themselves. I have a lot of sympathy because I know that the whole reason you're doing your work is for people not to ask you questions. And I think it's
great at explaining.
You're unusually gifted at being expressive in talking about it, but most, I think, it's putting too much pressure on the artist. That's why I always think musicians, just listen to their music. Painters, look at their paintings. I'm going to take the opportunity to tell you what I feel when I listen to your music. I won't massage your ego, because that's also uncomfortable. I'll say something the way I understand your music. I think this country lost its cosmopolitanism when its artists started leaving. And that's the Beirut I grew up with, and that's the Beirut I got to know your music through. Early on, years back, getting to know your music through your music, hearing it, back when you had to purchase music, and actually, Soap Kills is one of those initial CDs I would put on the top of my CD desk. Of course, you're not married to Soap Kills. You've moved on many years. You've been doing music for the better part of almost 3 decades, almost 2.5 decades or so. The 2.5 decades that I grew up with in this city, particularly, is the cosmopolitanism that went on the decline. This podcast is made possible by the generosity of listeners and viewers like you. Kindly consider a contribution through Patreon or PayPal. Links are in the details box. Any amount is appreciated. And follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. The handle, The Beirut Banyan. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And to stay updated with video releases, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Thanks for listening, and thanks for watching. I'm Rani Shattar, and this is The Beirut Banyan.
Today's episode is with Zaid Hamdan, a great composer and producer. If you know Soap Kills, you like this episode. And if you know Bedouin Burger, you like it even more. Zaid Hamdan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very honored.
Zaid, you're one of the best composers in the history of the country. And in modern times, maybe the best composer. You have like a million projects that we can't keep up with. I couldn't keep up with all your projects. So like preparing for this episode, I couldn't keep up with all the projects. But every project you did, everything I heard, and you've done a lot, was really good. And that's very impressive. On Saturday, I was at your concert, the Bedouin Burger. The Bedouin Burger project at CAD. And it was insanely good. I was seeing the faces. People were not like, they were mesmerized, every single one. So it's lovely having you, Zaid. Let's start, I want to ask you about your early days first. Let's start with, when was the first time you played an instrument and what was the instrument?
My first approach to music was with a guitar. I had a Brazilian cousin called Rodrigo that was really good on guitar, and he played Stairway to Heaven in front of me, and that was it. I wanted to learn how to play guitar. Also, my sister loved the Beatles, and she had pictures of pop stars on her wall, and me being a really I had the self-confidence issues when I was very young. I thought, arts, music could maybe make me more appreciated.
Which age are we talking about?
I'm talking 7, 8.
That's a bit young, yes.
Realizing that, but starting to perform and play on guitar, I would say 11, 12.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah. And then, and when did you realize that you want to be a musician?
Well, as soon as I got a guitar, I got hooked to composing. I was not at all a good technician.
Yeah.
But trying to create songs on a guitar is something that hooked my head like kids on Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, the music.
Yeah, I was like completely obsessed with writing songs and fantasizing on the songs I would write, because I would create my own world and fantasize about it.
Yeah, I see.
It was a refuge, a shelter.
So you were intuitive about composing, not so much technical, not music.
Never
musicology.
Technical.
Yeah.
Until today, I compose something. However complex it is, I will learn it. So you have songs, for example, like Nahr al-Mawt, that are really technically so challenging, but it took me two years to master this Maldengo guitar, you know, West African style, so I could sing and play the song. So you see, so I compose things that are challenging and I improve my guitar technique just to be able to perform the songs.
Until this day, that's very humble of you to say.
No, it's
And when did you realize that you have a talent? Like, okay, the passion maybe comes before the you realizing you have something to present.
I'm not aware about talent or no talent. I'm being very honest with you. As I told you, playing music was not only a game, it was like a therapeutic for me. And I try to keep on doing that because I love it. And I try really not to mind about the talent or not the talent, or the success or not the success. I'm really focused on finding ways to be able to continue to do what I love most. So,
what do you mean, financially or like?
Yeah, like if I do what I do with passion and people appreciate it, then I'm invited to do it. And years after years, I get paid more and more to do it. So I'm just focusing on doing my music in the most honest way. Not really thinking about how talented I am or about how successful the project will be. It is really something I really never think about, because if I had this thought, I would be very anxious, because
it's a huge
pressure. I mean, on 5 projects, maybe one will get the success and the other 5 never get out of the shades. And if I had the anxiety about success, I would not be able to deliver anything.
Yeah, I see what you mean. And where does, you have a lot of projects that, again, I cannot keep up with all of them.
Yeah.
So you produce a lot, actually, you compose a lot. Where does this come from? Like, does it come from the fact that you want to keep growing so that more people would listen to you? Or like, what is it, an addiction? Well, please explain it to me.
You know, same as I was saying before, I don't do that with a purpose behind it, a purpose of money or fame or I perform a lot of projects because I have a lot of friends. Like May Walid is like my family. Mariam Saleh is so intimate. Like Lina Deeb is close to me. There's not a single musician I don't work with that I don't have a personal relation to. And then the music comes. You see, the process of enjoying our company makes us produce music. So that's why I have so many projects. I don't have so many compositions, to be honest. I have a lot, but not infinite. I'm not an infinite source of music. I know, like, May composes so much, and I produce for her. Lina Deeb composes, I produce for her. We co-write some songs. I have my personal projects like Zayd and the Wings and the things I release under my name where it's my compositions. But it's the fact that all those community of artists I perform with, we are in a constant process of creating music. So that's why you see my work as a continuous flow of music, because, like, put yourself in my shoe. Let's say you have 5 very good friends and each one is so creative. and each one has a project that is, there is demand on it. So your whole life would be just a role of those friends, seeing them, performing with them, and with all the consequences of that.
So you're saying creativity feeds creativity.
Yes, if you're in an environment where the game is creativity, then you can't get out of it.
Is it a competition? Because you said game.
Ah, it's a game. A game in the sense there's not a loser and a winner, but there is the pleasure and the fun. Competition, look, sometimes I discuss with the artists saying, oh, Bedouin Burger is successful. Mariam Saleh has stopped. May Walid is not as successful. Zayd and the Wings, no one knows it. You know, like, sometimes there is this question of how come something will get more audience and something would not. But in my opinion, it's just visibility. I feel all those projects have the same power and value, but coincidences, you know, where we meet, how we meet, sometimes a project gets more light and another less, but it has nothing to do with the quality of the
project. Yeah, for sure. It's marketing, it's a lot of...
It's marketing, factors. Yeah.
Was there a time where you felt that you were not as creative and you didn't produce as much, and why?
Yes, it was in 2000, maybe 16, 17, around that. I wrote a song about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
What is it called?
I was in Izaulau. Okay. I was in a process of depression. I was taking a lot of drugs. And I had my kid, he was 1 year old. And I was looking at the past, seeing a lot of beautiful stuff, looking at the future with the fear of not keeping up with my dreams. And I was anxious, and it was eating me. And so I wrote a song about it. And the song was so good.
So you were uncreative to the extent of creating a song.
I was in a depression, and I wrote exactly a song about that.
Yeah.
And weirdly, the song is so beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of my favorite, that it became a mantra and it pulled me out. I pulled myself out of this with music and I cleaned myself, and I'm really...
That's nice.
Creativity came in, but I had this moment. I remember I fixed it in time with the song.
How old were you?
2000.
Sorry,
I
get
to see which year is...
It's okay. We don't have to do the math, yeah.
Yeah, maybe I was like 38, 39.
Okay.
39.
That's a late depression. Like, usually people have it before. But as opposed to what people believe, that depression injects, increases creativity.
Yeah, but...
In your case, it wasn't... It crippled you?
No, but I was really at a moment where you've done a lot... And you have a kid, he's a year old, and you're looking at life and you're wondering, like, oh my God, is the best behind? And, oh my God, where am I going?
Yeah.
You know, I think everyone has this moment because first, having a family it's a serious project, and no one should take this... not give the maximum care to his child. It's a duty. We have to cherish our children and give them the best of us. But then the reflection is, what is the best of me? I have to be happy. If I'm going to raise a kid, I have the responsibility to be a happy person. So go for my dreams and be free, you see?
Yeah.
Not enslave myself because I want to raise my kids. No. So see, that I was in this... very deep questioning about what father I'm going to give to this child, because I want the best for him.
For sure. I think about this a lot as well. I don't have kids.
Oh.
But like, I think about what version do I want? Like, do I want to be fully dedicated to my child? Or do I want to be a balance, like following my dreams at the same time to give him the best version of their father?
Yeah. Well, I would say without hesitating, you have to be totally happy and free so your kids see that.
Yeah.
And this is... in his vision, what happiness is about.
Sure.
Being free, going for your dreams. and not being afraid of the money or those kind of...
Yeah. In terms of music, having a kid, having a family, what kind of effect does it have on you? Like before, I don't know who you wanted to impress before family. Did it become that you wanted to impress family by making music partially or...
No. Again, look. Okay, every musician has this thing about how he is perceived, wanting to be loved, wanting to impress. But in my situation, because we were doing experimental or alternative Arabic at the beginning, Yasmin and I with Soul Kills.
Yeah.
And it was not appreciated. So the aspect of wanting to impress was not working.
You're not doing the mainstream, yeah.
Yeah, so we were doing risky stuff with sometimes audiences, you know, looking at us and being like, oh, what is this? Who are those people?
Yeah.
And I had so many concerts of not being appreciated that at a certain moment, I don't care.
Yeah.
I have today, I really don't care people loving or not. I really focus on being happy about what I do. You know,
yeah.
If I love what I do, then that's enough for me.
Sure.
And that's my first advice to any artist doing whatever art, is be convinced about what you're doing. Be real when you present something. Be really sure you like it. It's like you want it, and then don't mind the comments and the appreciations and the like and the no likes. Mm. Don't care about that.
I mean, it's working well in your case because people are liking the music.
Yeah, it's working well because I'm able to do my music and I can feed my family.
Yeah,
I'm not rich. I own no car, no possessions. I own nothing, but I'm so free and I feel strong.
This attitude shows, by the way, on stage and in your music.
Thank you.
Yeah, let me ask you about... the times you've gotten in trouble, if I may.
Oh, sure.
I mean, you're a great musician. I don't know much about your politics, but I know that in 2000, which year was it that you went to jail?
Yeah, so this whole jail thing, it was very clumsy episode. Not clumsy on my side, clumsy on the state side, because it was at the beginning of the Syrian revolutions.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they were afraid in Lebanon that something would happen, like revolution in Lebanon. And so when my song was intercepted at the security, the song called General Sleiman, I don't know how they thought it was a threat or something, and they wanted to make an example out of arresting me.
Yeah.
So I got interrogated for a week. What is the song? What is the purpose? For sure, there was not a real case. And then they jailed me without a real case for insulting the president. But
it's very generous for them. So,
yes. Yeah. I was very lucky to have a good community of friends and a great lawyer, Nizar Sarghieh.
Nizar was your lawyer?
Yeah. He took directly the case.
Did he have legal agenda by then? That he had?
No, no. Okay. No, but he was directly... he sent me someone that went with me to the Ministry of Justice. When I got handcuffed, I gave him my phone with my password codes of Facebook, and he did the post. I'm in jail, mobilized.
Someone working for him.
And there was this very mediatic effect. All the papers were like, oh my God, they're arresting a musician in Lebanon. This is the first. So I was like an example, and it made so much noise that after 8-10 hours, that's what I heard, the president himself asked for my release.
Yeah.
Like, well, guys, what is the story? Yeah. Pull him out. Yeah. So the judge, after like 10 hours, ordered me in his office and say, because the song is Jene General, go home.
Yeah.
So the judge is like laughing, saying, okay, Zaid Hamdan, yalla, go home. But so to correct, I was not jailed the way we are jailed in Syria or Iran or Palestine by the Israelis. In Lebanon, we have this very great chance to have some space for freedom of expression, and that's one of the reasons I really value Lebanon. Although there is this great obscure power due to all the religious leaders that try to deprive us from our freedom, but we are still on a very important ground of expression.
It's fascinating that you would think that after being jailed, like temporarily.
But yeah, because at the same time, I see Al-Ashoush in Syria, that his throat is cut
yeah.
and he's thrown in a river, because you see, I really appreciate that I'm just for 10 hours and the judge is cool with me.
How old was your treatment in jail, if I may ask?
You know, well, I was in jail with the people that make fake money and then some Islamists. And then all together, they came and asked me, like, okay, why are you in for?
Yeah.
I wrote a song. And they were all laughing, like, oh, my God, jail you for a song. Sing the song. So I sing the song. And yeah. They all laugh. And they were adorable. Someone bringing Manushe and Asi. Someone makes you... They were very nice and protective yeah, to me, the prisoners inside, yeah.
Did the jail time have a big influence on you? Because you're referring to criminals with empathy. You're saying they are empathetic yeah. and, like, compassionate with you, so...
Yeah, I met humans in jail. Some broke the law, obviously, and... It's very ambiguous, mostly in a country where there is not really a rule of law. So the people inside the jails, it's often arbitrary, politically motivated reason. I'll take an example of drug dealing in Lebanon. The big drug dealers are known, but they're not in jail.
Yeah.
They are dealing with the state. So where is the real criminal? He's in the parliament, he's in the seat of power. So, jail time was for me a reflection about corruption in general. Because also I think I was put in trouble not to protect the interest of President Sleiman, but it was something wanting to harm him. Somebody wanted to make him look like a bad guy. So they were playing with me to harm him because he was not even aware about the case. Anyway, we are all being played here in this region like on a chessboard, but the leaders and the opponents all work together and deal together. And I'm saying that even with, I'm at a high level, you know?
Yeah.
We all see that.
I mean, you're saying it's the president did not benefit of it. My best explanation of this is that back then there was a rhetoric of, oh, the country is going to become great, we have a new president after the Doha agreement.
Mm.
So you were the party pooper. So, yeah, that was not accepted. Like this narrative, when everyone was supposed to celebrate the prospering Lebanon, was not acceptable to the state.
Yeah, but
despite Michel Sleiman's knowledge or whatever. Yeah.
But, you know, that's what I really like in my role. Is saying, because I was asked about why would you be unfair to President Sleiman? We don't have value. We are just used for political agendas. You know, like Netanyahu doesn't really care about Hamas. He likes Hamas. He needs Hamas. He needs Hezbollah. Hezbollah needs Israel. They all need each other because without them, they would have no reason. They would have no power. So growing up in Lebanon gives me this conscience, political conscience, that moderates are hated from both sides. And us as musicians, our biggest role is to empower moderates, allow people that say, look, nothing is black and white. Just look at the person and understand if he respects the law, because there is only the law that protects us. There's nothing else.
Let's go back to the effect that jail had on you, Zed.
Mm.
Did it affect, like you're saying, you still believe in the freedom of speech in Lebanon. Did you have self-censorship after? We will talk about your most recent song.
No.
Which also has the word general in it. What's the phrase?
No. The last song is a song by Bedouin Berger called Isha. Yep. And it's Bounassir that... mentions General Aoun in the song, because the song, I think Bounassir talks about the moment he has to leave for Turkey and what he's leaving. The state of the dollar, the corruption, the general own and his craziness. And so it's that's what he's talking about in the song. But I can't do music without being aware of where it's being done and the situation. So my songs are not so political, they're social.
Yeah.
You see, so in the first part of the song, I say the Middle East is not the solution. That's what I say in the song. And it talks about someone that loves a person and doesn't know how to protect her or him. The song is about that, insecurity. It's again about us, the victims of this big game.
That's also a criticism to an ex-president. Again, a big criticism to a president. Mm-hmm. So I was asking, like, did you self-center after your jail time? Did it have that effect on you?
Not at all.
I mean, it shows, this is a proof, the new song is a proof you learned at least with the song. But for between these years...
Not just a new song. After General, I had another song that was really fun. It was Chacun a ses problèmes.
Oui.
Do you remember it?
Yeah, I heard it live for the first time last year.
So also I'm really saying names.
Oh, I don't, because I don't understand French. But
it's not French. Men n'était pas la
mustache. Oh, yeah.
Men n'était pas la Hezbollah.
Yes.
Man, you have to play an extract.
Yes.
So that was just after, like, okay, I should be afraid of breaking the law.
Yeah.
If you jail me for another reason, it doesn't scare me. I'm a victim. You know my position?
Yeah.
I cannot self-censor. I mean, I won't say that except if they harm my family. And this is the case in most of oppressive systems. They know that you would die for your ideas, but then they go for... The Israeli do that.
Yeah.
Like if someone is a resistant, they blow the family's house and they jail everyone. So, yeah, I would be scared for my family, but I hope they're in France now. That's one of the reasons I'm protecting them. They're in a country where we can, count on the law somehow.
Before talking about where you live now, the fact that you traveled, let's talk about being a musician in Lebanon. It's not an easy country to be a musician. Let's talk about before 2019, the economic crisis. How difficult was it being a musician in this country? Is it paying the rent, getting in jail, something like that? What are the difficulties?
Okay, if you are Lebanese and counting on Lebanon as a money resource to survive, it's very difficult because it's a very small country. For example, if I play once a month, it's enough. You can play twice or three times a month, your crowd will not... Or if you play too much, then you lose your crowd because if they missed your show, they know they will see you next week. So that's a challenging thing, is to work, understand how to raise a crowd and raise fans that will follow you. So the key for that is diversifying territories. If you play once in Hamra, you let 2 weeks, and then you play in Ashrafieh, and then you estimate how much audience I want. How much audience will allow me to survive? And I would count on 150 every 2 weeks. If I'm able to catch 150 person every 2 weeks, that would pay me $10. I'm telling you exactly how I used to think.
Yeah.
That's 3,000 a month. 3,000 a month that allowed me to pay the rent and eat some food. And then the extra cost, like the school and the insurances, I would try to get them with music licensing. So scoring for theater, scoring for movies. And at that point, you need to be regional. You need to consider, Palestine, Syria, Egypt, like one country. And this is your audience. And you need to go and find the people that love your music. And thanks to internet, I was able to do that. And very early, I was aware that it's one country, it's one nation. This region is one nation. It's just artificial borders. So go and get your audience outside of Lebanon, because if not, you die.
That's the financial part. Other difficulties of being a musician here?
Yeah, I guess before I had a studio, the difficult part was to be able to rehearse, because there is really not so much rehearsal studios. And if you want to evolve and progress with the band, you need to have a space where you can perform regularly. The lack of equipment in Lebanon also. I felt like the fact that they never play you on radios. I have a recording of the manager of Radio Lebanon saying, Zaid, we can, she's talking to Wafa Khashan. She say, oh, Zaid, we cannot play his music. We love him, but...
That's huge. Why? I mean, your music is not like extreme. It's a bit experimental, yes.
They think I'm...
Until this day, you're saying?
I've been... This recording, I got it from someone, and she was saying, we can't play his music. I did not know why my music was not played, but it was a decision. They were estimated I shouldn't be played. And, you know, I got a manager in France recently, and he told me, oh, you know, someone at the Mairie de Paris told me that at a certain time you were blacklisted because they did not want to hurt the embassy of Lebanon. So they were not able to program you, even in Paris.
What? How would it... I don't understand.
So, I am someone that is controversial to the state here.
Okay.
So, in France, the Mairie de Paris, yeah, they would avoid inviting me for Fête de la Musique or for concerts because they don't want to be in a bad term with the Lebanese embassy.
Yeah. Why are you controversial? Because of the General Suleiman?
Well, this one and the other songs... In all of my songs, yeah, there is...
some controversy.
There is some controversy.
I see.
And there was a memo. That's my French manager that told me that. That was circulated. Saying that if there is choice between me and another Lebanese artist, it would be preferable
to go for someone else. Powerful people in this country.
That shows you how, without you knowing, you're somehow blacklisted. And you don't feel it. You just don't get booked. Like, you see your friends getting booked, and you're not booked, and you're like, oh, are they better than me?
Yeah, yeah.
But now, with the change of government, the blacklist, and the change of government in France, I'm not blacklisted anymore, so I'm performing a lot in Paris.
That's great. But that explains a lot, because I do think you are underrated. Significantly underrated.
Well, it's obvious that... For example, in bookings in Dubai, they ask for my lyrics, and when they see that it has some social issues, they don't book me.
Yeah.
They will go for the artists that, you know, mostly about love or more less social. In the Arab world, we are so late in, you know, being in our freedom that my kind of lyrics gets blacklisted in a very subtle way.
Yeah.
You know, I have teams working with me on all the projects I develop with the artist, and they very kindly tell me, look, try to avoid being political, because then we cannot work. We're talking about Spotify, about Anrami, about... They don't want at all to be in a bad situation with the governments that host them. So every artist that has any controversial message will not be boosted or promoted on those platforms.
This explains a lot. So you're saying the finances are very difficult. Somehow being political...
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good for your exposure.
Yeah.
Right? And in a logistical sense, in Lebanon, like the first thing you were saying is difficult?
Yeah, everything technical, the rehearsal space. Like,
for example, I used to play drums.
Yeah.
Like, no one can play drums. Like, it's very hard to play drums in Lebanon.
Yeah, where do you go?
Yeah, where do you play? My mom was fortunate enough to allow me. But what about the neighbors? Like, from two neighborhoods, they would say,
So, and that affects how much drummers in Lebanon will exist.
Yeah.
In Lebanon, when we find a drummer, we like, we hold on to it because it's so rare. Like,
tell you something funny. My friend, like whom I used to play with, because I stopped playing, they are waiting for me since then for me to play again, because they wouldn't be able to find the drummers. If you like the episodes that we're doing, like, subscribe, and leave a comment, and let's grow this YouTube channel together. So that's for the difficulties of being a musician before the economic crisis. After the economic crisis, when did you leave the country? You live in France now?
Yeah, in 2020, there was COVID. No more access to the banking system, no more work, less and less electricity, security issues. Everything that made me feel that we were on the dancing on the edge of a volcano. And so late 2020, I started trying to leave Lebanon to put my kids abroad. And I got refused the visa by the French embassy saying, hey, you don't have money. Like, guys, you know the situation. I said, no, we don't know the situation. You can't leave. So only the crooks that saved money abroad were granted the visa for France. I love this. So in July 2020, when we were throwing our food from the fridge because there were no motor, no fuel, and no electricity, I told my wife, look, I feel this country is going down and dangerously. So how about we go somewhere quickly where we can be safe? This was a Friday, and on Monday we left for Antalya, no visa.
Yes.
And we left, we didn't take even stuff. And
that's how you left?
Yeah, in July 2020, end of July, mid of July. And I said to my wife, if this country is still holding on end of August, we can come back. 10 days later, 15 days later, the house was blown away. We were in Mustashfa room, next to Mustashfa room.
You lived there? So you survived the attack?
Oh, yeah. So we were not harmed. Thank God we're not harmed. But we never came back even to the house, ever. We never stepped back. You know, my kids' books and their toys and the instruments. I didn't want to come back anymore, ever.
Yeah.
So we stayed in Antalya. I asked for papers from the government there. I was given 6 months. And then I started begging my contacts in France to allow me to get an approval from Ankara for a French residency. And miraculously, it worked.
That's how it
is. And from Turkey, I went to France. And for a year and a half, 2 years, I would not even want to hear about Beirut or Lebanon. I was very sad.
I'm sorry to hear, aside from the political situation that was going on a music level, did you feel that it's impossible for you to play in venues again because of what happened, that people would not be able to attend even the concerts that you're doing?
In Lebanon?
Yeah.
No, but, you know, it kind of hurt what happened, that we're a bunch of people wanting to make this country a place that is inspiring for the whole world, and we put all our energy in it, and we thought we could win over the forces of darkness, because what we were doing, it was so inspiring and the good thing to do. May it be what was written politically by some young thinkers, or the music scene, or the arts. We were a great gang of people, and this explosion and the crushed revolution was mentally very difficult. We were all wounded. I was wounded. So when you would tell me Lebanon, I would cry, you know. And after a year and a half, I healed from that. So I was able to come back and perform.
Yeah.
But for a year and a half, I could not even hear the name Beirut Lebanon. It was, you know, they stole a big part of our dream. So the dream has evolved, thank God, and we're stronger. And so we'll keep on doing what we do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more of that than like, because when the crisis first began, I wouldn't have imagined the country to turn out, the vibe to turn out this way. Like, I would, it was hard to imagine that people would go to concerts again. Like, you know, it would be accessible for everyone. So was this in your mind? That's what I'm saying.
Well, in 2019, 2020, we were revolting.
Yeah.
So we were on the streets, we were asking for change.
But after COVID.
Yeah, and even during COVID,
yeah.
It was not an issue. We were able to think that, khalas, the country is going to change. People are aware, they're awake, and their money has been stolen. Yeah, like, how much can you bear, guys? So we felt we had a voice where we were not anymore the underground. On the radio, you would hear only revolution, pop Arabic song, like all every Arabic pop star. You know, served on the revolutionary vibe. So, no, I was hopeful. I loved Lebanon at that time, even though there was a big crisis. I felt people were awakened, you know. But this bomb, that was too much. This bomb was huge.
What about living outside of Lebanon? You're saying how much you love Lebanon, but you're living abroad.
Yeah, but I'm living abroad first because my wife is respected. That's very important. Your my wife is Ethiopian.
Can you give us contact? Yeah.
Yeah, she's Ethiopian. She's African. And in Lebanon, there is slavery. It is allowed. It is somehow there's a legislation around that, like the kafala system. But it's like, don't lie to yourself. It's slavery.
Yeah.
You know, if you cannot do kafala system in Europe, or because Europeans would not accept, but here it is tolerated. So it is this guy's slavery, and my wife was under the kafala system, and I was able to, through our marriage, to offer her a better life and better respect. And in France, she found equality.
Yeah.
So she can talk to anyone, her head raised, and they are on the same treatment, same law for abide on everyone. So that was a good thing about living in Europe,
yeah.
You know, to see my wife being treated well. And then when my wife has the respect, the children also, they evolve, the school where they are. The multinationality, multi-social backgrounds for everyone in the class of my kids. This is beautiful. This is one of the great achievements of France, you know.
Would you move back?
To Lebanon? I would love to, but I need my kids to have a solid education. I need them to be solid, and they're still forming.
Yeah.
They're still learning, but yes, I would love to come back. I love this country.
You would come someday.
I just love it, you know. I think because it's us. I feel we're a bunch of crazy dreamers with great ideas, but we're fighting a big monster, so
yeah.
We need to be together. No, we are together abroad, you know. We
because find a community.
Yeah, we find each other. And I'm not talking about just Lebanese, I'm talking about Arab artists. We share the same passion for a language and a culture, and we try to develop it and modernize it. And we're, again, from this huge region that goes from, I would say, Turkey to Maghreb, with every country around us here. And this community is really strong, and it's good we can work together and change things at home.
Speaking of the Arab appreciating being from the Arab region.
Yeah.
Your music over the years, am I right to say that it turned more Arabic? So Soap Kills had Lebanese lyrics, but it's a very Western, you know, style music.
Yeah, you're right.
And now it's Bedouin Burger. So over the years, did you appreciate Arabic music more?
Yeah, for sure. First, it's obvious that, you know, Yasmin taught me really what Arabic music was. I was just a tourist in Arabic music. I had an orientalist, but Yasmin had the real background. And this was the first step And then Hiba Mansouri, after Yasmin, really taught me the maqamat because she had them naturally.
Yeah.
You know, not even Yasmin had the maqam, the riba. She did not have it naturally. But for example, Hiba Mansouri had it from her childhood. And then Maryam Saleh had the Egyptian folk. So each one of the artists I worked with gave me powerful insight on Arabic music. So I had the best school ever going in. And now with Lean, I learned so much. And I am going to collaborate with Salwa in the coming month. So this is school for me. This is my daily university.
Why would someone growing in Lebanon, in an Arab region, make Western style music and not Arabic music? And why would they, you know, why would there be a point where they appreciate Arabic music more? Can you explain this to me?
You know, I sincerely believe there is no such thing as Arab music or Western music. Today, someone modern that has access to the whole world through internet does a genuine blend in the most spontaneous way.
Yeah.
So, for example, today I have the tools to play riba on my MIDI keyboard, and that's something new. 5 years ago, you cannot play riba on your... But machines have started to adapt.
Yeah.
The fact that there are Arabs everywhere and there are Indians everywhere, so they're even trying to go more than quarter tones now with the equipment. So you give us equipment and we are able to use it to translate our culture. And we use rhythms and beats and sounds that come from other genre, like hip-hop, electronics, jazz, drum and bass, whatever. And then your music sounds a blend of a lot of things. Again, like frontiers, though there's no more frontier in music. It's becoming a big blend of everything.
You said that you, over the years, you liked Arabic music more. Is there a reason for that?
Yeah, because I met singers that would sing Arabic music in a way that I had not heard before.
Yeah.
Go very honestly, like, how Lean sings and how Khansa sings and how Salwa sings, three different schools, and each one make me love Arabic music more and more, although I'm not so sensitive to Umm Kulthum.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not so sensitive. I'm more sensitive to Asmahan. Asmahan is my type. Umm Kulthum, I can't digest.
Same head. Yeah,
but when Khansa sings Umm Kulthum, you see, Umm Kulthum to me, I really, then I understand the power of Umm Kulthum.
Yeah.
Through someone's voice, not through the original recording. This is what Yasmin did to me.
Because that's bad quality or?
But because maybe I prefer the sensitivity of Yasmin Hamdan or Khansa or Lean. When you're not from the culture, and I'm not, I grew in Lebanon, but I was educated in French.
Yeah.
And there was never Arabic music at home.
Mm.
Well, when you hear Arabic music, you're like, it's just weird. It sounds weird.
Back then.
Yeah, for me.
Yeah.
I could not connect with old Arabic music recordings. Then I heard the songs through people I love, through their voices. And now when I hear the original one, I appreciate it. So I was educated. Like the kids, when they hear their parents sing the song. Yeah, I was educated by the artist I worked with.
So because of the sun at 8 p.m., we had to do this in my classes. I was saying, from the million projects that that you have, do you have a favorite one?
Honestly, no. Honestly. Like, in fact, I'm very happy I have a lot of projects, because if I had only one, I would get so bored.
Yeah.
I can't eat the same food for 3-4 days in a row. I need to have variety. Do you have a favorite friend? You have
some people. Friends.
Yeah. It's very different. I have a very special relation with every project I have, and every time I perform a project, I get the max pleasure out of it. So,
yeah, so it's not the latest project that you have.
No.
Okay.
No, like Soapkills is Soapkills, yeah. You know. I was formed in Soapkills. Zed and the Wings is my baby. I sing my songs with my voice, and I don't have to be careful about anyone. Just I pamper myself. But I listen to Zed and the Wings. I'm like, yeah, but listen to Yasmin, to Lynn's voice. And then May Walid is so personal in how she writes Arabic, you know. You can read into her soul. It's very honestly, beautifully done. And it's very inspiring for me when I write Arabic. So May Walid, I appreciate that. But who has the energy and the fire of Maryam Saleh? Who has it?
Yeah.
This girl is a lion. And she carries great political, strong, kick-ass messages. The New Government is one of my favorite punk bands in the world.
Mm.
You see where I am, yeah, at? How can I love one more than another? Each one, in my opinion, the best music in the world.
Yeah, it's clear.
Every single time you're back in town, I don't care what the outfit is. It could be Bedwinberger. It could be just literally you with a pot on the street. The fact that I know you're in town and all my friends know you're in town, it breathes life back into this city. So hearing you, I can hear Ted from here. I don't have to go to your concerts because I can hear you.
Are you serious?
But I've been twice. Saturday I couldn't make it.
Okay.
Although it told me to come, I couldn't make it, but I could hear it. That's when I feel the city is breathing a bit. And I just want to say, it's always a thrill knowing what you're doing abroad, because you deserve to shine and you deserve to fly high. Your wings should flap as much as you want. But even if they're shackled and they're stripped, and sometimes it's hard to do so here, it's great having you in Beirut. I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
I'm very honored. I love being here. Family, I feel... I really feel reunited with the family, at the real sense, you know. Did you miss Jamaa in February?
No, February and last year I was there. So
yeah. Did you feel the vibe of Jamaa?
No, but it's, you know, I think it's kind of like where you get first introduced to someone. I think I always unfairly think back to one chapter of your music, but I know it's evolved tremendously, and it's actually fantastic. And at 42, I'm impressed. I can still enjoy it. But I do go back to my 20s when I listen to you.
Uh-huh.
I think that's something I do often.
That's good.
Yeah. And as we get older and as we begin to fade a bit, your music should always be heard by all generations. Uh-huh. Thank you, Zed, for coming over.
Thank you so much. Thanks, very, very honored. Thank
for
you.
Doing this.
Thank you, Zed.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah.
Great.
5 years ago, Corniche, Manada Cafe with your child as well. Yeah.
5 years ago.
5 years
that
ago.
That was so fast.
And now upgraded Shrey with cameras.
Yeah, I
want to
see that. Thank you.
Thank you, Zed.
Thanks for listening and watching. And a friendly reminder to support this podcast by contributing through Patreon or PayPal. All links are in the details box. Until next time, I'm Rani Shattar, and this is the Beirut Banyan.
Thanks to Zed for joining again. We'll definitely have other musicians in the future, so stay tuned.